Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report. Chad and I are chatting with Joel Elkonen, co-host of the Benzinga Pre-Market Prep Show. Now Joel, looking ahead to this week, there are some potential key drivers for markets broadly. All eyes are on the Fed, which will have a press conference tomorrow. We will hear from Jerome Powell. We will get the FOMC statement. Expectations, I think, again, are for limited action, no change in action from the Fed, but maybe, just maybe, they'll start talking about winding back some of their easy monetary policies. No one knows, though, and that's the thing. The Fed has been pretty staunch in the fact of not changing its policies and still expecting this whole inflation to be transitory and still actually wanting stuff to run a bit hotter. Joel, what do you think? As we look ahead to tomorrow, what are you expecting out of the Fed? Do you think there'll be any major changes in market direction?
Thank you, Shad and Corey for having me. It's a pretty exciting, boring market. You definitely have some movers going on. I think the Fed's gonna stand pat. I think that Mr. Powell's talk about transitory inflation, right? That this is the lumber prices, some of the other higher commodity prices were just the result of non-production during the pandemic. You're seeing lumber come off hard. You're seeing some of the other metals and commodities coming off. So maybe Mr. Powell's correct on that. Taking a look at the bank stocks, their price action, JP Morgan down for the seventh day in a row. The banks like higher interest rates. So there's two indicators that said that the Fed is standing pat with their stance. For me, I try and look at like outcomes like of the meeting. And to me, I don't know how there could be put a hat on, I'd have to put the bear hat on, because if they do say we're going to do something with rates, then, the market's going to have a little fit because of higher rates. Then on the other hand, if they don't do anything, the Fed is missing the boat. They're behind the curve. We're going to have rampant inflation. So as I say that, the market always seems to come out with a positive income outcome no matter what, even during a pandemic. So it's tough to say, but I'm just looking at the action in the banks. I'm looking at some of these commodities pulling off. And so the conventional wisdom, but what will their tone be? When are we going to start? So it's a lot of conjecture and speculation and a lot of hard to predict kind of things in the market. So if you're an active trader, days like this, I can't interpret every headline that comes out of his mouth when he's speaking. There's a reaction when they actually give what they're doing. And then there's a reaction during the testimony.
Joel, I agree. Like, a lot of what the Fed does is they're professional job owners. They love to talk the markets into submission, but there's very little change typically in what they actually do. But you bring up an interesting point. They're kind of between a rock and the hard place in that if they ease up on their bond purchases of $120 billion per month, then rates are going to start rising, and that is going to pressure the markets, and we could have another taper tantrum like we did back in 2013. But if they don't pull back and we see central banks around the world starting to tighten, and if they give the impression that, hey, the reopening trade, everything is rosy with the economy, we're moving the right direction, then if they don't dial back their accommodative stance, people are going to wonder if it's not congruent. So in a sense, haven't they backed themselves into a corner that there's really nothing they can do?
I mean, exactly right. I mean, you also have to look at it two ways, a historical perspective. I mean, we are just at just historically low real interest rates, right? So they can't go much lower, and I don't think they're going to go the negative route. On the other hand, how much can they take rates up, with the debt and, the economy? So you're right. I mean, on both ends of the scale. So they're just, this stock's going to the moon, or this stock is tanking. How many consolidation periods in the markets where nothing happens? And that's the period I think you're ending here. You're been in and you're going to continue to be in as far as interest rates are concerned.
Now, Joel, haven't we heard that argument that the Fed and other central banks are between a rock and a hard place. I feel like we've been hearing that for a couple years now, right? And the Fed and other central banks seem to always default with the easier monetary policy, which seems to hype markets or pump markets. It seems like the Fed and other central banks always are focused on the markets. So does that mean, again, that if the market's correct on the back of whatever they say, we should expect them to maybe push back any timelines of being more dovish? Do you think that essentially the markets are their main focus still?
Oh, yeah. I don't call them pump and Powell for nothing. I mean, projections where at first at one point, I think I heard they were talking about 23, you know, and then, you know, maybe they're talking, you know, late 22, but no, nothing. And you know what? I mean, we can second guess, what the Fed does, what data they have privy to that we don't, but you know, overall, man, you can't complain, right? You know, the abyss the market was looking in and last March and April and some of the moves the Fed made. I mean, you can't argue. You can't argue with the chef if you like the cooking.
Joel, let's also dive a bit more into that commodities pullback, because you even mentioned it. We can talk about banks too, but commodities broadly are getting hit. And today is a tough day for commodities. Again, what do you think is driving that move down? Is it simply just a bit of a correction from a very, very strong run?
Yeah, I mean, commodities have that herd mentality, right? And they go in and you have, you know, not only do you have the, you know, the commercial players, but you have the hedgers. And I think that, you know, the whole way up, I mean, if you own a huge lumber company, right? And you're seeing, you know, lumber and these prices and, you know, the futures go out and you can lock in. I mean, you're hedged, you're locked in. Of course, if the prices can continue to go higher, well, yeah, maybe you're losing out some. But what these sophisticated hedgers are doing, man, is they're selling a chunk here and then they're selling a chunk here. And as long as the momentum is there with the commercials and the speculators buying, then everything is rosy. But when it turns, the hedgers are not going to be buying the back. They're not going to be buying the lumber back. They own the physical lumber. They're already hedged. So when these things turn, you know, same thing with copper producers, same thing with silver producers. When these things turn, you really don't have natural buyers because they don't want to lift their hedge. And everyone's long instead of short. So you get these kind of vacuums and the hedgers, you know, if they buy back the futures, then they lift their heads. So that's what I see happen. I mean, I tell you, if I own a Jumbo-Lard, I tell you what I would have been doing during that run. And the same with, your commodities, with your soybeans. I mean, you hadn't seen beans in the teens. I mean, since you got to go back. No, they didn't even get beans in the teens, like in the middle, barely got to 13 and, $13-$14 a bushel in June of 2016. Now you see the thing, you know, beans, you know, under, you know, $10 a bushel at 15. What are you going to do if you're a farmer and you've been sitting on all those years for all those crops for all those years, not making money or losing money? So that's what I'm looking at. You got natural sellers on the way up, hedging, and on the way down, you just have speculators that are stuck that were just chasing momentum.
Well, Joel, just to that point on commodities and tying into the inflation discussion, you know, it's not just beans in the teens. We saw Bitcoin with corn rocketing higher. We saw coffee almost double. We saw sugar go up on the soft commodities. The proteins have gone up, but also on the base metal side, there's some legitimate, not just demand situations, but there's some supply issues from the mines where, you know, there's problems in Peru, there's problems in Chile with copper, there's problems sourcing enough iron, there's not going to be enough copper to fund these EV infrastructure initiatives. So it may be that the commodities have pulled back some and that some people got stuck, but some of these trends seem a bit more entrenched. Semiconductors, their shortages, their supply chain interruptions. So the one that really has me looking the most at inflation and what a lot of pundits are talking about is the oil markets. Oil has gone up with the rest of the commodities, but it hasn't sold off as much. It's actually stayed levitated, and it's up to about 71, 72 now. And oil is a tax on all goods and commodities in the sense that you have to ship these metals. You have to ship these foods. Food cost at a grocery store for the end consumer is spiked by higher oil prices. Travel is affected. Airline prices will go up. Retail products that they're trying to get, well, freight will go up for shipping and handling. So oil is something that's going to be an inflationary pressure on the whole market. And I'm not sure that's going to just be transitory.
Is interesting is that oil is not, they are priced in some matter in the CPI, in the PPI, but they're not as big a part of it as you would think. So the price, I mean, just looking at the indexes, it's not as reflective. I agree with you on the rising, the negative effects on that. I just think for some of those things, like the reopening trade kind of is over, is the euphoria from that is kind of overshadowing, the higher prices, because the airlines have a little flexibility because they have higher demand. So they can raise prices. But there's going to be, that point, where, they're not going to be able to do that. So I think that you've seen rallies in those sectors, despite the rising oil, because of just the reopening trade. And when that fails, and these prices, and plus it takes a while to filter in too, right? Just because we're seeing barrel, 71, 75 a barrel, now you don't know how it was reflective in the prices. And also, you don't know how these companies, I mean, I know Delta has been known to do some hedging. So, who knows, who those buyers of oil were when it went to, negative. Was really not a number, but, maybe some of these, companies, used the futures contracts or used, different ways to hedge. But right now, it doesn't seem to be affecting it. But if the reopening trade comes off, you get another whiff of COVID, boom, boom, boom. I mean, it's not going to be pretty for those issues.
Well, let me just throw one more follow-up question then, Joel, just because I think it's an interesting discussion. So if people are paying more at the gas pump for oil and gas, that obviously will affect their travel to some degree. I agree there's a big reopening trade that's underway. But if people have less disposable income, we've seen this before in other oil and gas spikes, that if they have less disposable income, they're going to buy less retail goods. They're going to travel less. They're going to look at those prices going up and say, I don't know, especially after most of the country's been locked down for a year and a half and a lot of people have had a two-income household go down to a one-income household. So I also wonder about how it'll affect disposable incomes, which will affect what they buy in the marketplace. And there's one other factor that we haven't talked about, and that's the U.S. dollar. If the U.S. dollar has been weak, which it has ever since March, it's had a little bump recently, and maybe it gets a little bump if, on this reopening trade. But if it turns back down again, that's also going to push the price of goods and services up as the dollar falls. What do you think about how that may play into things?
Everyone's getting rich trading AMC. So disposable income isn't going down. People just got wads of money. Now, I'm being a little facetious here. You did have the bump up in the retail sales, right? People coming out off, people are participating in the market more. I mean, there's a lot of people that this pandemic, I've talked to some traders and some investors, and, they've done very well in this environment. Now, as long as the market continues to go higher, and you have this kind of Goldilocks environment, that will continue. You're right. Right now, it doesn't make a difference until it makes a difference. A growth stock can trade in outrageous valuations until growth slows down. So right now, it's all the things that you're talking about are 3, 4, 5, maybe 6 months down the line. But right now, I mean, this market doesn't give, I don't want to say it on the radio, but it defies every logic, every economic thinking known to man, and over just look, it finds the positive in everything. And it's just the retail sales booming, right? Everyone come out of the reopening trade. So it's going to be a confluence of factors. I don't know if it's going to be a higher interest rates. I don't know if it's going to be, you know, political, you know, problems with Russia. I don't know if it's going to be, you know, the ransomwares and stuff. But right now, if there's anything about this market, it just has showed the ability not to look forward, look in the present, and good news is good news, and bad news is good news. So that's just the market mentality right now.
That is fair, Joel, but you know what? There's just that much money, I think, being pumped into these markets, right? And that's one thing we do need to keep considering is that when liquidity is available and when there's even more money coming in, then it lands in these markets. And I guess the one thing we can say about this last run, well over a year now, is it's just been a rotation from one sector to another, and almost every sector has benefited. So how do you balance that out? Let's wrap it up here, Joel. I understand that people can be worried about there are risk factors in these markets, and markets are overheated, but with this much money and this many, I guess, investors willing and able to just put money to work, it's just a rotation trade.
Oh yeah. I agree. And if you can identify the rotations, get ahead of the rotations, you know, then you're going to keep pace with the market. Like you said, you know, higher interest rates or war. I mean, how can you pick a top in this market? You know, I've tried to pick a top, you know, several times, whether it's short-term trading, not much as with my long-term portfolio, but yeah, I mean, with the liquidity that we have out there, with a whole new spectrum of investors, with the retail investors coming into the market, along with the institutions, it's just the liquidity's there. And I don't, you know, everyone thought, oh, Democrats are going to get in there, that's not good for the market. Well, that's hogwash. I mean, it's just a, you know, Teflon market. Just everything bounces off it.
All right, Joel, we'll wrap it up there. Always interesting chatting with you. And I guess big picture look at the market. I realize people want to be bearish, but there's been a lot of bears out there for the last decade, which unfortunately keep on getting burned. But all eyes on the Fed tomorrow. Let's see what they do. Joel, great chatting with you, man. We'll chat again next week. Have a great rest of your week.
Thank you, guys. Always fun.